dice. Known for being rolled. Famous for being numbered. Nobody thinks much about them, so let's have some fun. Let's find out why dice are secretly incredibly fascinating. Welcome to a whole new podcast episode, a podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt, and I'm not alone. I am joined by three guests this week, and I am thrilled to say that those guests are Justin, Travis, and Griffin McElroy. The famed McElroy brothers, they are here. I know, it's really exciting. They are very kindly appearing on this podcast, and they have very kindly written a book to help you, because their book is titled Everybody Has a Podcast Except You. And that is a helpful, thoughtful, and funny how-to guide on how you can start your own podcast. It's available everywhere right now. Links to buy it are in the episode links at sifpod.fun. There are also probably unnecessary links to McElroy Brothers podcasting. I feel like most of you know about My Brother and Me, or Sawbones, or Schmanners, or Wonderful, or perhaps most relevant to today's episode, The Adventure Zone. These guys have created and are hosting or co-hosting more than a dozen different podcasts, so I'm grateful to every guest for their time, but especially these three making time with all of the other taping they do is really nice. I really appreciate it. Also, I've gathered all of our zip codes and used internet resources like native-land.ca to acknowledge that I recorded this on the traditional land of the Catawba, Eno, and Shikori peoples. Acknowledge Justin recorded this on the traditional land of the Shawnee, Eastern Cherokee, Hopewell, Adena, and Wasashe peoples. Acknowledge Travis recorded this on the traditional land of the Shawnee, Hopewell, Adena, Miamia, and Wasashe peoples. Acknowledge Griffin recorded this on the traditional land of the Lipan Apache, Nurmurna, Plains Jumano, Coahuiltecan, and Tonkawa peoples. And acknowledge that in all of our locations, Native people are very much still here. That feels worth doing on each episode. And today's episode is about dice. I want to thank two listeners for suggesting this topic. Thank you, Zoo Elder, and thank you, Steve Thomas. Your suggestion won the patron vote for a March fan-selected topic. If you, the listener, would like to suggest topics yourself and vote on topics, head to sifpod.fun. Also, this is just some magical timing, I think, because we had this fan vote, and then later on afterward, you know, we got in touch with the McElroys and we set up an episode. So really, really nice of Zoo Elder and Steve Thomas to pick such a perfect topic. Very excited for you to hear it. Please sit back or roll for charisma or dexterity or whatever. I don't know. Either way, here's this episode of Secretly Incredibly Fascinating with Justin and Travis and Griffin McElroy. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. Justin, Travis, Griffin, this is a real treat. And I always start by asking guests their relationship to the topic or opinion of it. But any of you can start. How do you feel about dice?
I think it's the best way to cut things up, frankly. Some people like to slice things. Some people prefer a chop. But I think a dice is the best way to go. You get kind of even both ways, smaller pieces.
And I'm so excited, Alex, because I've spent dozens of hours researching dicing, different techniques, knives, different cuts, superiority to chopping.
I will admit that I made a big mess up because I spent probably hundreds of hours researching the works of Andrew Dice Clay because I thought that's what it is that we were going to be talking about. But apparently we're talking about chopping things up small with knives.
That is and so embarrassing. I'll tell you what really changed it for me was the slap chop. You know what I mean? Because I was spending a lot of time before then individually kind of cutting it. And with the slap chop, you just put it in there and you slap and you chop it. It's in the name. Alex, and the best part is, not only is it effective, feels great to do. It's cathartic.
Listen, we're having a lot of fun. I mean, I'm busting up over here, but we're obviously here to talk about the Design, Innovate, Communicate, Entertain Summit, the DICE Summit, created by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences.
Oh, right.
It's an annual event.
Oh, yeah.
So for gaming. And
what
I'm
did
so
you guys think about this
to,
year's DICE
yeah.
event?
And I think it would be fun. One thing that would be fun is if we reference how DICE also sounds like the Swedish video game developer behind the Battlefront and Battlefield series.
Right. Yeah.
That would
be kind
of fun. That is fun. Is there anything we could do with like a Dyson?
That's something.
Thing, you know? There's something in there.
Alex, when you invited us on the show, did you sort of anticipate that Hulkamania was going to run
antagonism
wild
that we
this
bring
quickly?
I was like, please let them do the whole disambiguation page on Wikipedia for DICE. Please.
This is off the top of my head. I mean, this is, if you want me to go deep, I'll go deep. No, DICE. Okay, our relationship with DICE, it's because that we've always been like a board gaming family. Like, we grew up playing stuff like HeroQuest, even boring bad games like Monopoly or Chutes and Ladders, like which I guess is spinner.
By the way, just gonna throw it out, Game of Life far superior to Monopoly. There,
yeah.
I said.
Wow. But like since we started doing the Adventure Zone in 2014, I guess it was something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
It
right.
has become like a regular fixture of my life, so much so that like I almost always have within reach.
Yeah.
DICE. It's weird. You dig in my backpack and it looks like a board gaming convention in there. Like every pocket, like just reaching out. Okay. Here's a sack full of dice I have. I have two D6s here.
I have a wooden
with.
Case right here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I don't fetishize them. Like I don't, I have some that I really use a lot. Our agent Joel sent us a beautiful set. These like glossy, sort of crystalline, sort of beautiful ones. But yeah, well, like by and large, I have no religion about it. And I have no superstition about it. I just grab whatever is close and I use those. So, for a long time, I was using a couple from the Super Mario Brothers Yahtzee set just because they were nearby and I didn't go get other ones. And I kept right. telling myself, like, I got to get new dice. Okay. These are weird. But nope, kept using them.
It is fun, a fun thing that will happen because I have now just like a big Sacco dice, which I think a lot of folks have if you play tabletop games long enough. And the thing is like in Fate, the Fate system, there are dice that are like blank on two sides and then have like plus and minuses yeah. on the other sides. And sometimes I'll just grab a D6 out of that bag and roll it and be like, I got a plus. Oh no.
our youngest daughter, they were such a big fixture in our house that our youngest daughter started collecting them like whenever they were loose. And from the time she was three or so, she was calling them dreidels. And yep. We've been in a sort of game of chicken with the acceptability of that. Like, we have to tell her the right name for them before it's weird that she's calling them dreidels. But it is very funny that she's calling them dreidels right now.
Right.
So let's ride it out for, you know, 18 more months until we have to correct her.
I have a little, like, castle that is a dice roller that has, like, right. holes in the you know, turrets that you drop the dice down and they roll out. That, as far as BB is concerned, my four-year-old, is what dice are designed for. Beyond that, she doesn't care. You can put them in this castle, and they'll roll out the bottom, and it is the best thing. My one-year-old thinks they're for eating, and that's a whole nother thing.
That's always a danger. Big feature this episode.
and plus, the fact that they do, in many ways, look like candy.
They look delicious, some of them, sure.
But it is, I came to them when I first started. So I played D&D a little bit before we did Adventure Zone. And I immediately thought I was going to like have a set of dice for every character I played. And it was like, this is my, you know, this is a set that reminds me of the forest. And so I shall use them for my elf druid. And then eventually now it's just like, I don't know, let me see what I have. Okay, can I just roll two D10s and call it a D20?
Yeah, my story is basically the same as Travis. I never played D&D before. In any sort of serious way. I had a game that I played maybe a half dozen times in Cincinnati, but I was always more into miniatures than
I like
dice.
The way you just like said that, Griffin. Say that again.
Miniatures?
Miniatures.
Yeah, Griffin's kind of the jock, so he's more of a miniatures guy.
Yeah, well, that was back in fourth edition where you like more or less had to play on a tabletop, so you needed the miniatures, and I just like to not to the point where I was painting them. That was a bridge too far for me.
Right,
I do like.
You're
a good
gonna
set
have
of dice.
To work so hard to get this trivia in, Alex. You're gonna have to be lobbing it and praying for the freaking best.
I'm always said that. I'll say one last thing. When cons used to exist before the world went to pot, I enjoyed that sometimes it like dice sellers would just like, you know, they'd have all their little boxed up sets and they'd be like, here's like our fancy, like, you know, hand carved from bone or whatever. And then they'd be like, and here's just a grab bag of some D20s. And that's what I always wanted, of just like, give me four scoops of dice, please. Because I just like the weight of them. And I like having just a big sack of dice. I don't need them. That's not the purpose, but I have them in case there's some kind of apocalypse and dice become used as currency.
Right. Or projectiles.
Because I'm also curious, like, if your relationship to them, like Justin, when you're talking about having them all the time, if that has changed pre or post Adventure Zone starting. Because also, as I understand it, that show sort of, you tried an episode of tabletop gaming and then it sort of blossomed, you know? Like, that's interesting to me.
I mean, for me, it is a lot of the reason I have so many sets now is because of Adventure Zone, we have gotten a chance to like play with other people in other people's games. They've played in our games. We've done like special events for things, and it has become so. What's the word I'm looking for? Dice have become so pervasive in my life that I've stopped worrying about if I have them. And so, like, I'll jump into a game, like, for somebody else's show, and then I'll be like, okay, so roll a D8. And I'm like, oh, you got, oh, no, hold on. And then I'll have to, like, look to my left and right and collect all the dice from around.
I do, though, but, other than, like, the D4 or the D20, and obviously the D6, I still have to like take a moment when somebody's like, roll a D10. I have to like examine the dot. Like, even now, you know, 6 or 7 years into playing, like, I still have to like.
They couldn't have made the 12 and the 10 a little different, huh?
It's just,
And then they give you two 10s. That's the weird thing. You get the 10 that's like, you know, 0 through 9 or whatever, or 1 through 10. And then they give you the one that's just like 0, 0, 1, 0, 2, 0. Come on, guys.
That's for rolling a D100. You know that.
I know that, but they're so confusing.
Well, I love knowing this. And also, I think we can get into our first fascinating thing about the topic. Because on every episode, that's a quick set of fascinating numbers and statistics. And this week, that's in a segment called Everybody, Everybody, Everybody Wants to Hear the Stats.
That's good. That's a good one. Yeah, I like that one. Yeah. Make that one permanent. You just stop there. Yeah. You can't.
Just you can just make a sound file of that. We left it clean. We were quiet. So you could just clip that and then just use that as a stinger. Have people send in music to go with it. If anybody wants to put music behind that and send that to Alex, go right ahead.
It's a good way to go. And that was submitted by Shane DeLeon. And as folks know, we have a new name for this every week. Please make them as silly and wacky and bad as possible. Submit to SipPod on Twitter or to SipPod@gmail.com. But we have a few numbers here, and the first number is mostly because
Alex, has anyone ever done stats all, folks?
They
don't burn the great idea.
I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry.
You know, they did, and I learned that I cannot do a Porky Pig impression well. And even in the week leading up to it, I would be around our home. And so, like, my partner's here because it's quarantine, and I would be, like, under my breath trying to practice it because it's very annoying. Terrible at it. Still can't do it. The stutter is hard.
I'll give you some pointers once we're done recording off the air. I'll teach you my secret techniques.
Appreciate it. Well, the first number here is very simple. It's 2, because I'm pretty sure I will mix up these two words throughout the episode. If we're being proper, dice is the plural form of the word, and die is the singular. In modern American English, people use dice as the singular, but that's probably just going to come up. I'm probably going to mix them up. That's the plan.
Yeah, that's fine. I do it all the time, and I am a professional Dungeons and/or Dragons player. So I give you permission.
I'm knighted. This feels good.
Yeah.
Well, on to the next number here is 4,500 years. 4,500 years, that's the approximate oldness of the oldest dice that people have found. And the source here is a book called Do Dice Play God by Ian Stewart, who's a math professor at the University of Warwick.
They made a
he
bone?
Says that
is it bone? They're going to be bone, aren't they? Are they bone? Just tell me if they're bone.
Is it bone?
I think they're bone. It doesn't actually say.
Yeah, of course they're bone.
They got to be bones.
They made everything out of bone. There's other hard stuff.
They love bone.
God, love bone. They love a good bone.
And he says that these were found in ancient Iran. It's a site called Shar-e-Sukhte. And they were used for a game similar to backgammon.
Yeah.
And then dice probably originated in the Indus Valley, arising from the even older use of knuckle bones, which were animal bones for fortune telling and playing games.
Yep.
Because like you guys said, people love bone. Got to use it.
People love bones. They're spooky. How'd they even get in there? You know what I mean?
We did, on our podcast, Wonderful, we did a segment on backgammon because I love me some backgammon.
Nice.
And
I like front gammon.
I did not realize how many like wild cultural variations on backgammon there are. Like still today, like it's obviously coalesced around like the version of backgammon that is commonly played. But there's so many variants of backgammon all across the world with like different rule sets and different dice and like different mechanics to it. And I think it originated in Iran as well.
Griffin, what's the most dangerous version?
The most dangerous version?
Yeah.
That's knife gammon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Seems obvious now when you say the name.
It's just called bad gammon. It's just...
Yeah. I thought gun gammon was the most dangerous.
No, you don't. It's
back
no.
cannon.
No?
It's where you... Okay.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's got a lot of fun.
Well, the next number here is 41 to 54 AD, which is some years. That's the reign of the Roman Emperor Claudius.
Oh, yeah.
Because for one thing, apparently, according to Ian Stewart, the first dice that we're sure were used for gambling were in ancient Rome, and several Roman emperors loved them. But then the Emperor Claudius apparently was so into dice that he had his traveling chariot set up with a specially constructed board so he could have stable dice throwing while he was on like long traveling chariot road trips.
Oh, we had that in our minivan growing up. We had that same thing. Us and our emperor right there.
Yeah. All right. So Emperor Claudius was 100% real gamer is what you're saying.
Yeah, elite.
Yeah, he was legit. Yeah. He wasn't a fake dice geek. I don't know what the accusation would
be.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. You're going.
I bet it was really frustrating for him when like people would ride with him in his chariot, and he'd be like, "So, I had it. You want to throw dice?" And they're like, "Oh, I don't really play." And he's like, "Hey, I had a whole board built in my car. You're gonna play."
Back then,
I'm the emperor.
Back then, though, the games were much less sophisticated. Basically, he would roll one, you would roll one, and whoever got the higher one won. So it wasn't as much fun. People didn't really enjoy it that much.
No.
Yeah.
When the last number here, this is a modern thing. The number is 51, and 51 is the number of votes that each candidate got in the 2018 election for Byron Bethany Irrigation District Director in Contra Costa County, California. I know this is a long, long thing. The point is they tied, and then the legal tiebreak for the election was casting lots. And so in a 2018 election for an irrigation director, each candidate rolled a D20.
Oh my God.
To decide the election.
Hey, when you hear something like that, doesn't it make you think this is all a sham? Like it's all just
from the ground up.
So delicately... I can't curse, but BS'd together that everybody, like, if you look at anything for too long in this system of government that we call America, it all falls apart so quickly.
Can I ask what the die results were? Do we have those numbers? I'm curious.
We actually do, yeah. The Sacramento Bee, they each rolled a D20 three times, and the winning total for the winner, 51. The same number as the number of votes.
Kinda wow. Freaky.
Wild.
That's so wild.
Wild.
Yeah.
51, you're rolling well over the average.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, 50, what, 30? 30,
that's 17 average.
30 would be average. Yeah. If you know, 10, getting the median there, I guess 10 or 11.
No one say anything. Let 50. Griffin figure this out on the podcast.
And here's the wild thing, Justin. I already said it. Griffin just wasn't listening.
Yeah, so 51's a lot. That's like an average of, I want to say 17.
There we go.
Yeah, they apparently the final roll was a 20 for the winner. I'm not making that up. Yeah. So that was okay. It was dramatic. Like if there was a camera on it, it would be the end of the movie.
Okay.
I'm not saying they were cheating with loaded dice, but that's 100% what happened.
Yeah, was anyone watching? Because it's really easy to lie if no one's watching. That's you true. Just say like, oh, 20.
Right, just don't overshoot. That's all you need to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a 26. What? I got a plus 6 to elections. I've got this magic sword. Don't worry about it.
This t-shirt gives me advantage on election rolls.
Maybe they just, I mean, they couldn't, they used a D20. They couldn't have been taking this that seriously, right? There had to be parliaments like, I don't know. I don't necessarily love irrigation. I mean, I think it's interesting for sure, but this is honestly more of a flyer.
You could have it. Fine.
Even though the irrigation manager is a critical role.
Oh. Hey.
Oh, good I like stuff. It. Good stuff.
Guys, we have three big takeaways for the episode, and let's get into them. Starting with takeaway number one. We know the maximum number of sides a dice can have.
Huh.
Really?
This is
before it becomes like just a circle?
More or less. Yeah. And obviously that's like the number of fair sides and sides that make sense. But both ancient and modern mathematicians have worked together to figure it out. And the maximum is apparently...
How did they work together across time, Alex?
Listen, you just stepped all over the frigging number, Travis. God.
Sorry.
I was just about to climax. I was ready for that.
I'm blown away by the fact that...
payoff climax.
I'm just blown away by the fact that ancient and modern scientists were able to communicate throughout time to determine what the maximum number of sides were.
You gotta double check those ancient people. They believed in humors and all kinds of weird stuff. You gotta double check their math.
Yeah. All right, what was that number again, Alex?
It was 120.
Okay.
Beyond that, you either start to get a weird sphere, like Travis said, or it's an unfair dice. Yeah.
If I could just suggest, Alex, something you could try is make one with 121. And then it would just blow that
maybe
stat
just make
right
it
out of the water. If you just added
just
one
make
more
it one side
that,
bigger.
Just sneak one in. Make it. Oh, this is stupid. Make the die bigger a little bit.
Yep.
And then just add another side in there. And,
Yeah.
what shape is a 120? Because it couldn't be like equilateral triangle faces.
The
like
more
a, like
sides
a
you add, the closer you get to spherical.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Are you asking, Griffin, and I won't speak for Alex here, but 2/3 of the other people on this call, you're asking us to off the top of our heads... geometrically design 120.
It just looks probably like round. It looks almost like an orb. Would be my because like the okay. the more sides you add, like you think about how a D20 is like a closer approximation of spherical than
I'm thinking about the faces on the sphere.
Well, that's wild, Griffin. Okay. I don't know. They're like circles.
No, they wouldn't be circles. It would be.
They wouldn't be circles,
triangles.
But they also wouldn't be equilateral triangles because I don't know that that would...
They're hard stars and rainbows, horseshoes and blue moons. I don't know, Griffin, please.
Okay,
I'm a simple farmer.
So I just stuck it in the chat because that's a great question, Griffin. The sides are almost right triangles. Apparently the big angle is just short of 90 degrees. And
yeah, look at that.
Obviously, there's a podcast. People can't hear exactly how it looks, but if people want to look at a link, they can see it or... Just generally, it's like if a D20 got really, really subdivided out of control.
Yeah.
Is the general
idea. Okay, the thing about this is, and this, I've seen like D100s this way too. Really, anything past a certain size, when you roll it, you're going to lose about 20 minutes of game time figuring out which is the side facing up.
That is, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Like you need a level from the hardware store. Like, okay, so the top is this one. Yeah.
Yeah, right? It's too much.
Apparently, this is made by a team called the Dice Lab, also working with Oberlin College math professor. But apparently, they spent a lot of time trying to print the numbers on it, like especially the triple digit numbers, like print them without interfering with the dice's surface. So you have that whole issue, too.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, each face, I mean, these dice look huge, but each face individually is quite small. And so etching... 107 into this small face has got to mess up the like physics of the of the dice roll.
See, and this is also one of those examples where it having been worked on a group makes it impressive. And if it had been worked on by an individual, it would be worrying. You know, you see, like one individual walks out like, I've done it. You're like, oh,
you
my God.
You want me to come eat roast beef right now? I'm at 118, sweetheart. Please.
I've almost got it.
Please. I don't care if the kids are graduating today. The twins that we have. This is a rich fiction.
Oh, there's a lot going on here. Or my name is an Andrew Dice Clay.
Stop
Whoa, twist. It's in my blood.
I like the idea that Andrew Dice Clay was a twin. So then there's another Dice who's very different and is like, no, I'm much more of an Andrew Normal
Clay.
Well,
otherwise he would be Andrew Die Clay.
Don't you wish Andrew Dice Clay's first name was like bread, and so his name would just be three things? His name it's would like, be like a really weird grocery
spaghetti
list.
Dice Clay.
It's 1/8 of the way to his like Bitcoin code phrase. Like, just a,
his name would be an activation for like a sleeper cell. It's a,
my Manchurian Candidate trigger is Carnation Dice Clay. Don't bring that up with him though. He's extremely sensitive about it.
Yeah.
Well, so this this D120, according to the team who made it, it is the ultimate fair die allowed by Mother Nature, is how they branded it.
Okay. All right, guys. Just say this is the biggest one we could make.
Just
right, right. We just couldn't cut it anymore. That's basically it.
We gave up.
And apparently part of the reason they're confident that you just can't get more complex is there are other researchers who have figured out all of the different fair dice shapes. And we'll link to a YouTube series called Number File. Brady Heron makes that. And he talked to Stanford professor Percy Diakonis, who said that he and a collaborator used math and computer modeling.
Stop. There is no way. There is no way. I could roll. I need a 120, a D120 to find the odds that that person's name is Percy Diakonis. It's
That's that's the ancient mathematician that they pulled from the past. They pulled him
that's
forward.
That's like predestined. Right. Like the parents are like, I love a kid that studies dice. Well, go with Percy Diakonis.
Through the time rift, right.
Go with Percy. No, we really want him into dice. Not
listen
just a little.
For
oh,
a
okay, Percy Diakonis then.
Yeah. Stepping up to the plate now for home run opportunities, Percy Diakonis.
I'm out of it.
Not
don't
happening.
Believe it. Yeah.
And the Oscar award for best onstage kiss goes to Percy Diakonis.
Now welcome majority whip Percy Diakonis. Nope, absolutely not.
Percy, come back from the kitchen. It's your turn to fight the orc.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yep.
I'm the most accomplished hitman in history. My name is Percy Diakonis.
Absolutely not.
Yes.
Unfathomable. Maybe I shouldn't be so chagrined that that is his name because that is the only thing his name could be. That's a D1. It's just that one thing that his name could be.
Like they wrote that on the birth certificate and wheeled him to a university. Like, okay, see.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're so worried about making the biggest fair dice. Give me a smaller dice. You stout a D4. Give me a D3, cowards.
Hey, that's a good... Right. Is D4 the smallest one you could do, Alex?
Well, technically, there's D2.
That's a coin. Stop. Yep.
That is a coin. You are correct.
It's not a D.
I've seen a D3 before, but then you start getting away from, like, angular shapes, and it looks more like a football sort of situation, where it has only... There's a word for this, but it only has, like, two axes that it can roll on. I forget what the name of that kind of shape is. And then a one-sided die would just be like a Mobius strip, which...
So I got a one.
Yeah. Let's see.
I got a one again. It's a one.
Right. Just throw it for your friends. Like, see? Another one. Like, okay. Can we play?
The only thing you can use a one-sided dice for is for rolling for how much fun rolling a one-sided dice is.
Right. But then a one would be like a critical success on that die.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Whoa, I'm looking at pictures of D2. They're weird. If you could imagine two C shapes interlocking, you know what I mean? Like it's bizarre. Just use a coin.
Yeah.
God.
Easier.
Come on.
It's hard being the biggest jock in actual role-playing game.
I don't know. Joe Manganiello plays, Justin. You sure you want to?
That's actually an extremely good point. I bet they're all bigger jocks than I am. I take it all back.
He's quite a large fellow. Vin Diesel plays. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're the
yeah.
third biggest.
Yeah, third biggest. You're talking about physical shape now.
No.
Okay. Sorry. Go, Alex, please. I'm sorry for ruining your podcast over and over again.
I'm glad to know the jocks now. This is good.
Yeah.
But just the last thing here with the modern scientists like meeting the ancient ones through a portal or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So Mr. Percy Diaconus and his collaborator, they tried to model all of the kinds of fair dice with computers and math and everything else. And they say there are 30 families of dice shapes that are fair by symmetry. That actually makes sense. We'll have a picture link for people because there's no way to describe it. But he also says that they did all that research, did all that figuring, and then realized that Archimedes pretty much figured out the same thing like 2,500 years ago. Because math was the same. Just did it.
Why didn't they check
he
first?
He didn't have TikTok to distract him, so it's actually less impressive if you think about
it.
He couldn't have even checked TikTok if he wanted to.
Wouldn't that... I bet that that's a thing that not a lot of, like, scientists are worried about. Like, I invented the car. Oh, actually, Archimedes invented the car, like, 3,000 years ago. Like, it's that, like, you would think, like, I'm going to make a dice. And it's like, hey, shouldn't you look and see if anyone has made, you know, a dice before? Nah, this is fine. I've invented the sandwich. No, Travis, you did not invent the sandwich. No, the sandwich has been around for a while. I call it a cup. Oh, nope. Sorry, bro. That's the thing. No.
The other thing with the D120 is that this team claims they did it and like are the first people to make it, but they also say that a French-Belgian mathematician named Eugène Catalan came up with the math in 1865.
Oh.
They quoted one of the founders of the Dice Lab. He said, quote, "This is not an original idea. We were just the people crazy enough to actually do it," end quote.
Or bored enough. Come on.
Right.
Come on. We were just the people who did it.
I wish I could be the guy in the 1800s who, like, somebody walks up, like, what are you doing? And it's like, oh, I'm working on theoretical dice shapes in my head. What are you going to do with that? Are you going to make that dice? I do not possess.
I am not that crazy, my man. Are you kidding me? Do you know how crazy someone would have to be to make this? You could tear the whole universe apart with power like this.
It'd have to be the rebels of dice math.
There's no way I'm not until Percy Diaconus comes along will someone be crazy enough.
Percy Diaconus? You mean the bad boy of geometry? Yeah, that's him. It's the one.
The prophesied one? Yep.
Well, and also with complex dice shapes, the last thing there is that D20s are just older than I think people realize or than I realized before researching it. In 2003, Christie's Auction House auctioned a green glass Roman D20 from the 200s AD. And then also the Metropolitan Museum of Art has a D20 from the 100s BC made of a rock called serpentinite that was found in Egypt.
Ooh.
So they've been making D20s. I assume D20s are from like the 70s. But they're very old. Well, they go way back.
And just if I could do a little deductive reasoning, I could buy a D20 now for like $2.50. So I have to imagine that Roman one is probably like, what, $30, $40 worth, right? Like, because like it's old, but it still does the exact same thing,
and
right?
It's made out of glass. It'd break the first time you try to roll it. I don't think you should even have to pay $30 for that. That's a bad dice.
Does it have any features?
It is awesome to think about the idea that Gary Gygax was like, anyway, this game's easy. All you need really to get started is a dice with 20 sides on it. And everybody on Earth is like, what are you talking about? Those don't even exist. This is no one's going to buy this game.
And he's like, I dug it up in Egypt. And they're like, I'm not going to do that, too. That's not.
Fine. No. I'll just make some for you guys. I'll call my friend Percy.
Next thing here is a big trumpet sound for a big takeaway. Before that, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Well, from here, let's get into the second takeaway. Takeaway number two. Most dice are at least a little bit loaded, and some of them decay.
Huh.
It's just a bunch of features of mainly six-sided dice that I was not aware of until digging into it. And the best example of, like, truly fair dice as much as they can be are probably Vegas ones. So we've got a bunch of things here that Vegas does to make their dice relatively fair.
This is a piece of, because I got very interested in the balancing of like D20s and stuff when we first started playing. And like, if you're worried about it, it's safer to get a clearer dice. You can see if there's any like bubbles or, I mean, for lack of a better word, inclusions in it, like you would find in a diamond. Mm-hmm. And there's also ways that you can like float a dice in water to like test it,
right,
to see how balanced it is.
Wow.
I think,
listener at home, I wish you could see how furious Alex gets when other people mention trivia that they know about. He's like overturning a bookcase behind him, like unbelievable. He's tearing pages out of his trivia books.
Oh boy,
this is a sad
sight. He's just writing the trivia he knows on the wall. Oh, is that blood? Is that
feces?
Oh boy. Feces.
Secretly incredibly disturbing, more like.
Alex, like, come back to the mic. Tell us about the Vegas thing. I'm sorry.
Well, folks, we're the new hosts of...
I wish I was doing all that, but also super committed to quality podcasting, so I'm trying to do it silently. Like, I'm tipping the bookshelf as gently as possible.
You got your pop filter on, so you won't get the plosives of the bookshelf being thrown to the floor.
And Travis, what you said about transparent dice, that's one of the big things Vegas does. If people ever see Vegas six-sided dice, they're almost always transparent. Hmm. They're also just machined really precisely. According to Ricky J, a big source for this episode is Ricky J. He wrote an amazing mm-hmm. piece for The New Yorker about the history of dice.
Love Ricky J.
They are also, I have noticed, because I enjoy craps as a game, and I have been to Vegas before, the dice in Vegas have kind of sharper corners.
Yes.
Where, like, if you ever see, sometimes board games will have, like, the very rounded off corners and, like, rounded off edges. But the ones in Vegas are, like, much more, like, cube, like, refined cubes.
Absolutely. And I think it's mainly so they roll better and more evenly. I feel like home dice are so if you throw them at your brother, it's okay. You know, like, they won't stab them. But that's really the only reason they're done that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And according to Ricky J, casinos now demand a dice that's machined to within 1/10,000th of an inch on each side.
Wow.
Which is incredible engineering to put into dice, but they're doing that.
Yeah.
And then also with the numbers on dice, like most regular dice that you get from a board game or something, they drill a little hole for the number and then just paint that. But because there's a different amount of holes on each side, then it's weighted unevenly. And so Vegas dice, they fill in the hole with a paint that is the exact same density as the dice material.
Wow.
So then it's even.
Interesting. I thought they would just make the dots bigger on different sides. Like make the six side have the dots be quite small and have the one be, you know, larger so that the volume of dice sort of that has been excavated would be essentially the same.
Did you know that there with D6s, you probably did know this because you're like a trivia person, Alex, but there are like dice that are non-regulation D6s that occasionally will pop up because to be a regulation D6, like in sets and stuff, the opposite sides have to add up to 7. And so, like, and there, then, because there, there's then a certain order that the numbers have to go. So sometimes, like, there are dice sets that are sold where those numbers are not in the right order, so that the sides don't add up to 7. And those are non-regulation D6s.
I love that.
Do you know the word for the laws that dictate which numbers are on opposite ends of a dice? It's a very good word. Chirality.
That's amazing.
The chirality of a dice is the sort of pattern upon which the numbers are applied, so that the opposite facing numbers can all sort of add up.
Now, Justin, you do one.
Justin, okay. You do a fact.
You can swallow any die if you put your mind to it. Just believe in yourself.
Oh man, I wish I could curse. Hey, Alex, it's a critical shit. Okay, you can you can edit that out later if you want.
Well, the other like trick with Vegas dice, and Travis, you've probably seen it from craps, is when people play craps, which I'm told is mainly just a North American game, but anyway, craps has a rubber diamond pyramid bumper on the table. Like you throw the dice and then they bounce off this very textured rubber bumper.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Percy Diaconis, he's back. Boo.
Oh, yeah. What's up, buddy?
He says that...
I'm sorry we had to drag him away from his threesome.
Yeah. Oh, no, Justin. It's a three-sided dice that he's working on.
Oh, my mistake. Okay.
So he says that if you go to Vegas, like there are scammer type people who will offer you a class and they say like, hey, I can teach you to do a role that will win craps more often if you take my class. He says basically every one of those classes just comes down to how to do a role where the dice slides with one number on the top the whole time. And he says that so those bumpers are there to prevent people from doing that. Once the dice bounces off that, it's going to turn over. And that's a way they fix it.
Also, you'll get yelled at if you do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that you'd get one of those. Right. Guys, like, please don't do that. There are rules and stuff.
Are there classes that they'll teach you? Are there classes that they'll teach you of how to keep the dice on the table? Because that's my bit. I'll go, like they'll bounce off. And you have never seen an adult more disappointed in another adult than you have when you do that 2 times in a row at the craps table.
Yeah, they'll enjoy it.
I was there for that.
The amount,
terrible.
The extent to which Travis thinks it's a good idea to play craps also is directly proportionate to the amount of alcohol he has ingested.
It's the best game there, my man. Best odds. Best odds. Just ask me and my friend Bob. It's the best odds in the whole place.
He's got a system, Alex.
I got a system. I never lose. I bet on every number.
Yeah.
And as long as you can keep grabbing the dice, they can't stop you from throwing them.
That's right. And if you throw them, that's legally, it's a dice roll, and they have to follow the rules.
Yeah. And if you swallow them, they can't take your money away until they come out and they see what the numbers are.
And if you throw 50 identical dice that look like the dice you just rolled all at the same time, you can take your pick of which.
And if you yell Yahtzee loud enough, you own the casino now.
Yep.
That's just how it works. They won't tell you that in your fancy books, Alex. You got to learn it here on the mean streets with me and my friend Bob.
Well, and as far as like the slidey kind of roll, a team of engineers has done computer modeling to discover that basically every 6-sided dice roll is a little bit loaded if you don't roll it a whole bunch really hard. Because what they found is...
You just say cheat, Alex.
I turn to academics for how to cheat. It's the only way I know. Mm-hmm. This is again, the book Do Dice Play God by Ian Stewart, but... This was a 2012 study led by engineer Marcin Kapitaniak at the University of Aberdeen in Scotland. They built a computer model of what happens when a 6-sided dice rolls. They included air resistance, they included friction against the table, and they found that if a dice bounces like a normal amount of times, like 4 or 5 times, your chances of the number that was on top when you threw it coming up, the chances there are 1 in 5. So just however you were holding it, whatever was on top when you released it, you have a 1 in 5 chance, even though it's a 6-sided dice. Like, that's a pretty big big swing.
Yeah, it's a big dip. Yeah, that's just stupid, apparently. Yeah. What a waste of time.
That would have been a bunch. You know that movie that they made about the people who, like, created a team of, like, card counters and stuff? It would have been a much different movie if it was just them trying to gently roll dice. Like, oh, yeah, some cool music playing as they go, It's five yeah. again, but are you okay? Are you, sir? Are you cool?
I feel like they would have to claim to have Mr. Burns's body where they're just not strong enough to roll it hard.
Right.
That would have to be the trick.
Blow on him, baby. No, not so hard.
These bad teens are learning how to fake a severe iron deficiency in not bringing down the house.
And the team here also found that in order to get true 1 in 6 probability on that top number, you have to either massively spin the dice when you roll it or bounce it at least 20 times, which I don't think anyone has ever done.
How do you do that? Yeah.
Can't. No.
It turns out we really have to bounce and roll our dice really hard for them to not be kind of sort of loaded. Like, I don't think most people are watching what's on top when they throw it. But if you do, you will over time know what you're throwing more than you otherwise would.
All right.
And then the other thing about dice is that we said that some of them decay. This is coming from, again, Ricky Jay, the magician, author, actor, so much more. When he was alive, he collected old celluloid dice because in 1868, John Wesley Hyatt in Albany, New York, developed celluloid. It's best known as like movie film, as old time motion picture film stock.
Mm-hmm.
But it also became standard dice material until the mid 1900s. So for almost a century, we were making our dice out of celluloid. And Ricky Jay has found and will have pictures for people. The dice will, he says, quote, typically remain stable for decades. Then in a flash, they can decompose.
Mm.
After the release of gases, the dice cleave, crumble, then implode. He has a whole collection of dice that basically look like they're molding, like they went bad in the fridge.
That's wild.
See, that's why we make them out of bone now.
Yeah, gotta have bone dice.
Don't worry about it. We're back to bone.
Is that what... So those were the celluloid dice that broke down in that way specifically?
Yeah, those specifically. And then I guess in the 1950s, they switched to mainly using something called cellulose acetate. So then that doesn't do that. But if you have dice from before the 1950s and you keep an eye on them, they will look like old vegetables or something after a while. And if you go to the Museum of Jurassic Technology in Culver City in LA, you can see some of Ricky Jay's dice that have decayed.
I have. I used to live 2 blocks away from the Museum of Jurassic Technology. I took people there all the time.
What a wild place that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, awesome. I've got a dice made out of uranium, so it'll be good to go for like 4 billion years before it starts to
I have a dice made out of ice. Let me find it. Damn it.
Oh no.
And then we won't be able to solve your murder until we figure out the riddle.
Oh, you know. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the sawdust. Don't worry. I was a fish.
Well, from here, I think we can do the final takeaway of the main episode. Takeaway number 3. Europeans might have changed their approach to dice making.
I knew
it! As they changed their beliefs about fate.
Oh.
Whoa.
One more time. Europeans might have changed their approach to dice making as they changed their beliefs about fate. I'm being specific about it being Europeans because this is one theory based on one study by one guy, but it's about a sample of old dice he found in the Netherlands from like Roman times to modern times.
Because it used to be that when you were born, the priest would look at you and say, this person is fated to be a dice maker.
Right.
And then eventually they were like, no, I think anybody can and can't be a dice. What are you talking about? And so then it changed, right? That's what you're talking about?
Right, the judgy baptism priests, like, this is a dice head. I'm feeling it in the water. Dice head, totally.
We shall name him Percy Diaconus.
Alex, I'm on tenterhooks. I need to know exactly what it is that you're talking about.
So this is a scientist named Hjalmar Erkens. Another great name.
Going up. Awesome. Yep. So good.
And he's a professor of anthropology at UC Davis, and in a 2018 study, he looked at more than 100 examples of antique dice from the last 2,000 years in the Netherlands. And the basic finding was that dice have not always looked exactly the way they do now, in the sense that old Roman dice from the 100s and 200s, he says that they were noticeably flatter or noticeably long, like they were weird shapes for something that's supposed to be a cube. And it takes until around the 1450s for dice to be more cubic, more squared off, more like fair. And the theory that he came to from this is that the shifts in Dice's appearance may reflect people's changing sense of what exactly is behind a role, whether it's fate or whether it's like the science of probability. So the idea is before people believed in probability, they were like, well, you know, the gods just do everything. So my dice don't need to be like machined right, because the dice will just be whatever the gods say.
I like that, because one step removed from that is like, do we really need to roll, Doug? Just give me your fiver. Come on, Doug. Look at your life. Look at mine. The gods clearly want me to be successful and for you to fail. I'll take your horse now.
Yeah.
That's like turbo Calvinism. It's like, if you use a moonstone on Calvinism, it's what it evolves into. That's wild.
Yeah, his work on it, Erkin's and others, it ties into like the scientific revolution and mathematicians trying to figure out the basic science of probability. According to Ian Stewart's book, the first like writings on probability science, one of them was a book by Girolamo Cardano, who was an Italian mathematician who published on it in the 1600s. And then also Christian Huygens, the astronomer, did a book in the 1600s called On Reasoning and Games of Chance. That was 1657.
Are none of these people just like Steve Smith discovered, I don't know, like kiss your dice and they'll roll better?
That is true.
Yeah, that is true. That does work.
The field is short on conventional names. I don't know why you would think somebody would just be Bill Thompson and figure it out.
Is it like pop music where they start as Bill Thompson, but then when they decide to get into like mathematics, like I gotta change my name to something cool.
Yeah.
Like Percy Diaconis is the Sting of mathematics, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Because before that, you probably want your dice to be not a super weird shape, but also maybe you haven't totally thought through this is totally based on chance. You believe a more antique thing, like turbo-Calvinism.
And you had other things to do. You had to fight off unicorns and stuff. There were dragons everywhere. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense, because you could have a six-sided dice where one of the sides is just made out of lead, and so it's always going to have the same result. And at that point, it's like the grace of God is not going to like make different numbers come up at that point. So the engineering behind the dice is still inherent to what, I don't know. It just feels fairly easy to kind of poke a hole in that. It's just laziness, honestly, is what it is.
You think there was probably like one smart person around who was like, no. And it's like, oh, you don't trust the gods? Oh, yeah. This guy doesn't trust the gods. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Or maybe it's one person to say it's God's plan that we engineer these dice to be completely fair. Like, not one person thought to say that out loud. It's just, I don't get it.
By Zeus's beard, Doug is cheating. Everybody, Doug is cheating.
I'm just thinking about Doug the smug. Or wait, is Doug the person losing? I'm forgetting who Doug is now.
It's hard to keep
whatever
track.
Whatever it takes to get Doug the smug in there, we have to go with it.
Right.
His real name's like Dougius or some shit. I don't know. I'm sorry I cursed again, Alex.
Travis?
That is the main episode for this week. My thanks to the McElroy brothers, Justin and Travis and Griffin, for lending themselves to yet another podcast and writing a book that will create more of them. Amazing. Anyway, I said that's the main episode because there is more secretly incredibly fascinating stuff available to you right now. If you support this show on patreon.com, patrons get a bonus show every week, where we explore one obviously incredibly fascinating story related to the main episode. This week's bonus topic is the most incredible legends about dice. Several mythological and ancient stories and one 20th century urban legend. Visit sifpod.fun for that bonus, for a library of almost three dozen other bonus shows, and to back this entire podcast operation. And thank you for exploring dice with us. Here's one more run through the big takeaways. Takeaway number one, we know the maximum number of sides for a die. Takeaway number two, most dice are at least a little bit loaded, and some of them decay.
And takeaway number three, Europeans might have changed their approach to dice making as they changed their beliefs about fate. Those are the takeaways. Also, please follow my guests. They're great. Justin Travis and Griffin McElroy have a wonderful new book out. It's titled Everybody Has a Podcast Except You. It's funny, it's practical, it's everything you need to know and want to know if you're going to try to do, I was going to say what I do, but really what they do. They do much more of it, and it's really impressive. I'm so glad there is a how-to from guys like these guys who know what they're talking about. You can also head to themcelroy.family to see all of their podcasting endeavors, or head to sifpod.fun for links to everything I just described. Many research sources this week. Here are some key ones. A great book titled Do Dice Play God? That is by Ian Stewart, a math professor from the University of Warwick. A great YouTube channel called Number File, that is by Brady Heron, and he talks to Professor Percy Diaconis of Stanford University about their research into dice. And then a great article in The New Yorker, it is called The Story of Dice, it is by Ricky J. Ricky J passed in 2018, he's very much missed, and he was way more than an article writer. He was an actor, a historian, a magician, and just really somebody to check out. If you miss all the dice stuff we talked about and you learn about Ricky J, I think we still did good. That's a good thing. Anyhow, find those and many more sources in this episode's links at sifpod.fun. And beyond all that, our theme music is Unbroken, Unshaven by the Budos Band. Our show logo is by artist Burton Durand. Special thanks to Chris Souza for audio mastering on this episode. Extra, extra special thanks go to our patrons. I hope you love this week's bonus show. And thank you to all our listeners. I'm thrilled to say we will be back next week with more secretly incredibly fascinating. So how about that? Talk to you then.